This is Agriculture Today.
I think the most noteworthy thing here is you can see it grow dramatically from the year 2000 to 2019, the year before the pandemic, where we spent $4.4 trillion, and then the pandemic hit and spending exploded. But unlike, for example, World War II, where prior to World War II, spending was 11.7% of GDP, went up to, I think, way over 40% during the war. With responsible leadership, we went back to 11.4%, actually lower than what we were. We didn't do that with the pandemic. We went from $4.4 trillion to $6.5 trillion and never looked back. This year, we'll spend about $7.4 than 2019. There is absolutely no justification for that whatsoever.
Rising federal debt projections raising new concerns now for ag. Economists are warning long-term fiscal pressure could shape farm policy funding, credit costs, rural economic stability in the decade ahead. That's Wisconsin Republican Senator Ron Johnson, the chairman of a Senate Finance Subcommittee, where Congressional Budget Office Director Philip Swagel told lawmakers debt held by the public projected to rise from 101% of GDP this year to 120% by 2036, while annual deficits projected to grow from $1.9 trillion to $3.1 trillion. Lawmakers from both parties framed the outlook differently during the testimony. Republicans emphasized fiscal discipline. Democrats focused on protecting key safety net programs. China's shift toward animal protein consumption continues to reshape global feed and meat markets, with rising purchases of meat, eggs, and dairy closely matching declines in cereal grain consumption. Retired USDA economist Dr. Fred Gehl reports Chinese household survey data shows per capita cereal grain purchases fell from just under 139 kilograms in 2013 to over 110 kilograms in 2024. Now that, while purchases of meat, fish, eggs, and dairy increased from a little under 60 kilograms to over 88 over that same period. The near one-to-one shift reflects broader dietary change as the incomes increase and food preferences evolve. Now, pork remains dominant in China's protein mix, despite the growth in beef and mutton demand and steady egg consumption. Cattle and sheep inventories across North America declined slightly entering this year, reflecting continued herd tightening alongside modest growth in select segments. That's according to USDA's National Ag Statistics Service, looking at a combined U.S. and Canadian cattle and calf inventory report, 97.3 million head as of January 1st, essentially unchanged from the previous year. Now, U.S. inventories did slip to 86.2 million head, down from 86.5 million, while Canada's herd increased 3%. Cow and heifers calving were down slightly for both countries year over year. Sheep inventories also edging lower overall. Combined U.S. and Canadian sheep and lamb numbers down slightly at 5.82 million head. Market sheep and lamb inventories increasing modestly across both countries. It's Agriculture Today.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today. PurpleWave.com.
This is Ben Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally at Scott Land Company sold thousands of acres of irrigated land, dry land, and CRP in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698. That'll get Ben Scott. We really need listings on all types of property.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
California's Low Carbon Fuel Standard, also known as LCFS, has been successful in changing the state's fuel landscape.
Matt Wolf is with Terrain.
As an emissions trading scheme for transportation fuels, LCFS rates each fuel against a carbon intensity target based on life cycle emissions per unit of energy. Cleaner fuels earn credits, dirtier fuels rack up deficits. Since its implementation in 2011, the program has outperformed, meaning more credits have been generated relative to demand, pushing down the credit price. A high number of credits to date have been generated by biofuels, and specifically renewable diesel, which now makes up nearly 70% of diesel volumes. However, in response to criticism by environmentalists that the program has been too lenient, the California Air Resources Board, also known as CARB, adopted major changes to LCFS in July 2025. These changes raise important questions about how California's fuel environment will evolve and the subsequent disruption to renewable diesel refiners and the oilseed crush plants who supply their feedstocks. Three changes are particularly significant. Number one, stricter carbon intensity reduction goals. The carbon intensity reduction target is now 90% by 2045, with an auto-acceleration mechanism that makes the target stricter if there's an oversupply of credits. This is up from the previous goal of 20% by 2030. Number two, adoption of California GREET 4.0. Starting in July 1, 2025, new applications must use the California GREET 4.0 model. All fuel producers must comply by January 1, 2027. This means higher carbon intensity scores and fewer credits for fuels made from soybean, canola, and sunflower oils. Number three, limits on crop-based renewable diesel. CARB has set a 20% cap on crop-based biofuels in annual diesel reporting, effective January 1, 2028, with current pathways exempt until then. Predicting the state's fuel markets, however, requires caution. LCFS reforms are only one of several forces reshaping California's energy landscape, and many of these pressures move in conflicting directions. Refinery closures, the potential expansion of E15, the rise of electric vehicles, volatility in credit markets, and broader economic conditions all interact with LCFS in ways that are difficult to model precisely. Even so, the implication for Midwest agriculture is increasingly clear. Renewable diesel refiners and the oilseed crush plants who supply their feedstocks are likely to experience significant disruption as renewable diesel generates fewer credits under the tighter carbon intensity schedule. While the most immediate effects will be softened by the temporary grandfathering of existing pathways through 2027, the structural shift becomes unavoidable in 2028 when crop-based renewable diesel faces the 20% cap on credit generation. This shift is likely to be felt from crushers all the way down to growers. In recent years, soybean oil has played an important role in soybean economics. During parts of 2021 and 2022, oil accounted for roughly half of a bushel's value, compared with a historical average closer to a third, according to a 2025 University of Illinois paper. However, the 20% cap will undoubtedly temper U.S. soybean oil demand, highlighting the influence of CARB on U.S. agriculture. Given these changes, producers in the Midwest must plan carefully for the future. Renewable diesel producers who expanded quickly in response to market signals now face uncertainty due to LCFS amendments.
It's Agriculture Today.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX Advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688. There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
Introducing the heavyweight champion of the livestock operation, Case IH Farmall Utility Series Tractors.
Farmall Utility Tractors don't just outweigh the competition. They're engineered to distribute weight where it works, from the transmission, central housing, and axles to the differentials and final drives. So add some weight to your operation and go the distance with Farmall Utility Tractors.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Yeah, this is actually where the story starts to get worse.
Josh Linville, Vice President of Fertilizer with StoneX.
So you look back at that graph that shows you all the biggest exporters, right? Well, that's looking at it from a standpoint of just what they export. That doesn't include what they actually produce on a given year. So I told you China is normally number two, number three. They are the biggest single producer of urea in the world. So fortunately, production rates in China continue to remain solid. There's no problem there. But look at number two, India. India is not on the export list. They are one of the bigger importers because they need that much more over the top of what they produce. And there's a big issue that we have today. India is very reliant on that natural gas coming from the Persian Gulf region. As long as those channels are shut down, Indian production is currently taking hits. This is the one thing that we're actually worried significantly about. They had just locked up 1.3 million tons of their last purchase tender. We're afraid they're going to be back very, very soon because their domestic production is down, and we could see a lot of force majeure with those tons that they had bought previous. And typically when India steps in, they're looking for a million and a half ton. Normally, it could be more with everything going on. That is just going to be throwing gasoline on this fire if they step back in. Again, Russia, who knows? If Ukraine continues to attack Russian targets within Russian territory, we have seen that include nitrogen production plants. We got to watch that. Iran is in the middle of a war. Egypt, that gas flow coming from Israel is a big deal. Pakistan relies on gas coming from the Middle East. Qatar, Saudi Arabia, both of these sitting behind the Persian Gulf. So as bad as it looks from an export point of view, it's worse from a production point of view. Again, our fundamentals today are significantly worse. So everybody's sitting there saying it's too high. I don't want to sit there and tell you it can't go lower, but there's an easy case to be made that prices are substantially undervalued from where they should be, given all the stuff that's going on around the world. And I know we're all talking about nitrogen. That's what you do when you talk about the Persian Gulf. But Saudi Arabia is a major phosphate player in the world. So take a look at this phosphate export chart here, right? Morocco, fortunately, they're doing okay. There is some concern with anhydrous being just as impacted as urea is. Anhydrous is a big variable cost input. So that could start to have a little bit of an impact on Morocco. But China's the biggest producer, the biggest supplier, exporter normally. 2024, they're the second because the government is pulling back on those exports. 2026, they've said we're not going to export until August at the best. Could they do it earlier? Yes. Could they just not export at all? Yes, absolutely. Saudi Arabia, number three on this list. They're stuck behind the strait. Can they ship some of these tons through the country out to the West Coast ports? Maybe, but again, you're talking a much less efficient situation. Russia, again, they're in this war with Ukraine. That obviously brings a little bit of worry there. U.S. production rates continue to be near record low operating rates. So our own production here in North America is suffering. And guys, I mean, we just talked about all five of the biggest manufacturers, all five of the biggest exporters of phosphate in the world have got one problem or another. We're talking about nitrogen. Phosphate, which has already been extremely high, and I'm not saying it's cheap by any means, but this is a bad situation. And I don't want to, again, I'm not trying to be sensational. I do not want people to take this and be like, oh, we're going to $3,000. I want to do this more just to give you a sense of the what and the why everything is happening around the world. We have got a lot of supply points. We've got a lot of production points around the world that are currently being impacted, not just the Middle East. It is a global situation that's going on.
And even though we have some lower prices here, doesn't mean we're immune.
I will tell you from a U.S. perspective, we've continued to say we need about 5.1 million tons of urea. We have got a heavy March. We've done great July through February. But the thing that we're watching now, NOLA urea prices are a steep discount to the rest of the world. We are in danger of losing normal supplies that come here. Vessels that are right pointed here might get pointed elsewhere. And frankly, if we get too much of a cheaper discount or much of a bigger discount versus the world, we could start taking barges off the river, reload them back onto a vessel, and ship them to the rest of the world. We actually saw that happen a couple weeks ago with phosphate. A trading company bought up a bunch of DAP barges because we were such a discount, loaded onto a vessel, and reportedly exported that out to another country.
It's Agriculture Today.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts around here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
This is Agriculture Today.
But the congratulations, I think, Tony, needs to go out to all the folks in farm country.
Chairman of the House Ag Committee from Pennsylvania, G.T. Thompson, on committee passage of the 2026 Farm Bill.
You know, what we debated last night and what we eventually passed with bipartisan votes really was a product of traveling the country, you know, 43 states, one territory, really over 150 listening sessions. We really did this in a tripartisan way, bringing Republicans and Democrats and the key stakeholders of America's number one industry, which is agriculture, to the table.
Talks about the bipartisanship in this bill.
82% of the marker bills had bipartisan co-sponsors. So out of 181 marker bills, there was 141 bills that were solidly bipartisan to start with. And that's, that's important. Now, you know, we had some bills that and some amendments that were offered that, you know, maybe just weren't quite right. They were going to violate the role of a budget neutral farm bill or they would cause harm to the agriculture industry. But myself and my team were willing to work with those members and try to refine. We worked very hard to refine those amendments so that we could find a place for them within this farm bill. And that's the way the process should be.
As with most things in Congress, there was partisan behavior. But at the end of the day, they did come together.
I think we do a great job, but we have to, right? There's a lot on the line because what we're doing is trying to provide the supports, the environment, you know, for the American farmer to be successful, and for rural communities to be able to thrive. And so there's a lot on the line, that we have to make sure that we get this right. And doing it that way is, as I like to say, in a tripartisan way, right? Republicans, Democrats, but making sure that we're listening to all the folks of American agriculture. That it is. I actually think the Agriculture Committee is a pretty special place. It's got a long history of bipartisan work, and I think we solved to some degree a great portion of that last night.
And in order to pass that bill with bipartisan support, there were seven members who crossed the aisle.
Right, and we had two vacancies last night on the Republican side. So sadly, the seat that was held by a good friend, Doug LaMalfa, who passed away here just a little over a month ago, I believe. And that seat had not been filled yet. And then also, sadly, Jim Baird was not able to make it. His wife had passed away just over the weekend, and so he was home with family. So, yeah, the final vote was 34-17. It's kind of a two-thirds vote. I'm very pleased at the end of the day.
But what are three big asks for soybean growers? Steven Sinski, CEO, American Soybean Association.
More stability on the trade front. You know, let's open up new markets, but let's not shut down any markets that we have. And so that's the number one thing. Number two, I think is just keeping that demand for biofuels strong. And then third is just dealing with the ag input prices. Whatever we can do to lower those costs to farmers, I think would go a long way.
It's Agriculture Today.
This is Ben Scott, Scott Land Company in Dimmitt, Texas. We have literally at Scott Land Company sold thousands of acres of irrigated land, dry land, and CRP in Texas, New Mexico, Oklahoma, and Colorado. Look at our website, scottlandcompany.com. Give us a call at 800-933-9698. That'll get Ben Scott. We really need listings on all types of property.
Purple Wave Auction remains the trusted leader in online equipment auctions. What makes the difference is you. You are part of our growing global community that continues to trust Purple Wave with the equipment that builds and feeds America. This trust placed in us by our community, from construction to ag producers and fleet drivers, brings great equipment opportunities to their next owners. Join the Purple Wave community today, purplewave.com.
You're listening to Agriculture Today.
We've all been taught to basically just sit there and kind of take everything with a grain of salt. Oh, they're just trying to get views. Oh, they're just trying to get this. And most of the time it is.
Josh Linville is vice president of fertilizer for StoneX.
And I understand that kind of the irony of me sitting there saying this, and what I'm about to say is even more sensational than what's been being talked about out there. And I think that's a little bit of, there's a lack of knowledge. This is a market nobody's really talked about in the past. It's kind of a hidden industry, if you will. And now everybody's trying to play catch up and they're just grabbing what they can. And because of that, honestly, I think they're undershooting how bad the situation is rather than overshooting, which is very odd. And so, you know, the way we always look at it is we look at it from the top exporters in the world, because that is what develops the global trade. And so this, you guys have seen this before. This is our top 10 list of urea exports around the world in 2024. This is the most up-to-date data that we have. And so we've been talking a lot about Qatar, Iran, and Saudi Arabia. Why? Those three countries are either in the war, Iran, or they are back behind the Strait of Hormuz, which we're going on the second week now of that strait being closed down, which basically means those two nations may as well be shut off. And in fact, some of their production is being shut off because the vessels are not showing up. This stuff is not being able to get shipped out. So we've lost those three. That's what everybody's focused on. But let's broaden out the picture a little bit. Let's look at Russia. They're doing okay. There's nothing stopping Russian flows from going. But they're also still in the middle of this war with Ukraine. And what that means is it's a heightened war risk that all of a sudden something could happen and suddenly those start to fall. If the world, if they take a step and the world says no, new economic barriers start to be put in place. Those numbers could start to get impact. Now, they've got a lot of their own allies, if you will, that are major, major buyers. India is a friend. Brazil is a friend. Those are two of the biggest buyers in the world. So we don't think that that's going to actually fall, but it's important to watch. Numbers two and three, Qatar, Iran, we've already been talking about that. Egypt, well, Josh, Egypt's in North Africa. Why would I care about that? We need to worry about it because the gas that feeds their nitrogen plants, or a lot of their imported gas that goes into nitrogen production, it originates from Israel. What's going on in Israel? They have to worry about counterattacks by Iran, so they're shutting down their gas fields. That, in the past, has had Egypt slowing down or stopping their own production. That's something we need to watch. Luckily, Oman sits outside the straits. They've been doing okay. Saudi Arabia, of course, they're stuck behind there. And what this list doesn't include is China. China, at the beginning of the year, basically said, we're not going to export until August. And why is that important? They would normally, if they're in their normal rate, 5 to 5.5 million tons per year, they'd be number two or number three on this list. And as of right now, they don't exist until August. Can they come in sooner? Absolutely. Could they delay it past August? Absolutely. If this world's situation continues and they want to keep those tons home for their own people. So we're looking at this list. Numbers one, who should be number two or three, number two currently, Iran, Egypt, Saudi Arabia. Guys, we're talking six of the 10 biggest exporters of urea in the world right now either have or could have an impact to their export flows. So we do a lot of time. A lot of the industry is talking about this in terms of, well, what does this mean versus 21-22? How bad is this versus 21-22? 21-22, we thought we were going to lose Russian exports. We never did. It was the fear of losing Russian exports. And European production did suffer because of those high gas prices when they shut off cheap Russian gas. Today's S&D, today's global supply and demand model, is significantly worse from a fundamental point of view than it was back then. The only thing in my mind that is keeping this price from blowing right past what it topped out at in 22, grain prices, significantly slower.
It's Agriculture Today.
Introducing the heavyweight champion of the livestock operation, Case IH Farmall Utility Series Tractors.
Farmall Utility Tractors don't just outweigh the competition. They're engineered to distribute weight where it works, from the transmission, central housing, and axles to the differentials and final drives. So add some weight to your operation and go the distance with Farmall Utility Tractors.
I'm Scott Wiley. We'll try hard to earn your business, but even harder to keep it. That's it. That's all.
Manage your risk and take advantage of opportunities with StoneX. Utilizing StoneX's global presence to provide the best in market intelligence, a vast portfolio of risk management and marketing products, and a team of brokers who specialize in working with those in agriculture, StoneX provides the resources you need to make the best possible decisions. Learn more about the StoneX advantage. Call Donna Hughes at 214-613-1688.
There's substantial risk to futures and options trading. Not all products are suitable for all producers.
Ag News Now. Agriculture Today.
Right now, livestock producers are nearly 40% more optimistic than crop producers.
Dr. Michael Langemeyer is the director for Purdue's Center for Commercial Ag on the Ag Economy Barometer.
But here's the bigger story. Despite that gap in confidence, both groups are making remarkably similar long-term decisions about growth and succession. Each month, we survey 400 U.S. agriculture producers as part of the Purdue University CME Group Ag Economy Barometer to measure producer sentiment and expectations about the farm economy. The February 2026 results highlight a sharp divide between crop and livestock producers, primarily driven by differences in current margins. The overall Ag Economy Barometer Sentiment Index in February came in at 116, indicating that sentiment is more positive than during the index's base period in late 2015 and early 2016. We break the barometer into two components, the index of current conditions and the index of future expectations. In February, the index of current conditions was 121, while the index of future expectations was 113. We separated respondents by farm type, and then we looked at the differences. Livestock producers reported an overall sentiment of 140. Crop producers' sentiment was reported at 102, almost 40 points below the sentiment for livestock producers. The difference was particularly wide for the index of current conditions, reflecting stronger livestock markets and tighter crop margins. We also asked about capital investment plans. The Farm Capital Investment Index was 59 for livestock farms, but just 46 for crop farms. Both readings are well below 100, meaning more producers think now is a bad time to invest rather than a good time, but livestock producers are clearly more optimistic. Short-term financial expectations follow a similar pattern. Livestock producers expect improved financial performance over the next year, while crop producers remain cautious. However, when we shift from short-term farm outlook to long-term strategy, the picture changes. About one half of both crop and livestock producers plan to grow over the next 5 years. Moreover, 36% of all respondents plan to bring another family member into the business during that time. Passing the farm on to the next generation was the most selected long-term farm goal across both groups by a fairly wide margin. Looking ahead, the sharp divide in margins between livestock and crop operations will likely continue, shaping short-term sentiment and investment decisions. Stronger livestock returns are supporting confidence today, while tighter crop margins are constraining capital spending and elevating financial stress. For Midwestern crop farms, staying competitive will depend on improving productivity, carefully managing input costs, and strengthening working capital in an environment of uncertain prices and volatile returns. Disciplined machinery investment, cost control, and risk management will remain critical. For livestock operations, stronger current conditions provide opportunity, but maintaining that advantage will require continued attention to feed costs, by far and away the largest cost of most livestock farms, margin protection, and balance sheet discipline. Across both farm types, long-term growth and transition plans suggest producers are looking beyond today's margins. Strategic planning, succession preparation, and capital allocation decisions made now will shape competitiveness over the next decade.
It's Agriculture Today.
If you're going to succeed, you need cotton that's strong enough to perform around here where you grow. That's why Delta Pine cotton varieties are bred to meet the needs of your neck of the woods and are rigorously evaluated by local growers for maximum performance potential and consistency year after year. Strong cotton performance starts round here with locally tested Delta Pine cotton. Learn more at DeltaPine.com. Read and follow pesticide label directions, grain marketing, and other stewardship practices.
Let's talk about logos. What's the value of a good mark? Well, when it comes to the seal of cotton, it's pretty big. Introduced in 1973, the seal of cotton trademark has planted itself in consumers' headspaces. In fact, 94% of consumers say the seal helps them easily identify cotton products. 85% say they associate the seal with softness, comfort, and durability. 40 years of cotton research and promotion really adds up. You grow the cotton? The Cotton Research Promotion Program helps grow the value. Learn more at cottonboard.org.